You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Bastida, a.k.a. Scott Perry Garcia, lead singer of the Grateful Shved. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 298. On today's episode, Ashwin Ramnath is back. Can't get rid of him. I'm actually being held hostage in his basement. So if any of you guys are listening to this, please send authorities to somewhere off the Morgan stop. I think I am. I don't know. I haven't seen daylight in a little bit. Please help me. I'm in danger. But anyway, Ashwin is going to help me continue to grade New York Knicks and their performance in the 2017-18 season. On today's show, we're talking about Mindaugas Kuzminskas, Ramon Sessions, and Joakim Noah. Before we get to the grading, I'm going to talk about two tweets from Wednesday about the Knicks coaching search and what they mean. One from Mike, from Mark Stein of the New York Times, and one from Shams Charania of Yahoo. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So at 11:59 a.m. on Wednesday, Mark Stein tweeted, "Interesting wrinkle in the Knicks coaching search. League sources say Mark Jackson has received a strong behind-the-scenes push from Rich Kleiman, Kevin Durant's longtime business partner, and a lifelong Knicks fan who is close to both Jackson and Knicks president Steve Mills." And some people, you know, I'm not even going to say that they were wrong, but they started freaking out, and they were like, "Oh my God, this means Mark Jackson," and blah, blah, blah. So I looked at it, and I was like, all right, let me try to figure out what's going on here. And when you look at a tweet like this, you have to ask, who is it coming from? Why is this bit of information out there? And so, if you're scared about Mark Jackson coaching the Knicks, which you should be, because that would be a disaster, you want to say, all right, did this come from the Knicks front office, that he's getting a late push? And when you read it again, no, the answer is no. It can't. It couldn't have. Why would they have leaked this, right? Interesting wrinkle in the Knicks coaching search. League sources say Mark Jackson has received a strong behind-the-scenes push from Rich Kleiman, Kevin Durant's longtime business partner, not even his manager, and a lifelong, or, you know, agent, and a lifelong Knicks fan who is close to both Jackson and Knicks president Steve Mills. So the Knicks aren't going to put something out there that's like, hey, we're getting pressure from Kevin Durant's business partner, who also is a fan of the Knicks and our friends. Because if they're putting this out there, it would make them look so stupid. It's like, look, guys, we know you didn't want us to hire Mark Jackson, but we got pressure from our friend and from a friend of Kevin Durant's. And, you know, if you ever want Kevin Durant to come here, which he obviously is never going to, then we got to hire Mark Jackson. Like, it's just dumb. It has Mark Jackson's dumb fingerprints all over it. I'm not trying to go negative here, but it's how I see it. And this is the kind of thing. This kind of goofy BS is the kind of stuff that Mark Jackson does. He puts out this dumb stuff and tries to change the narrative. And, you know, listen, this may not come from him. It might be just coming from this climbing guy. I don't really know that. But this, like, kind of circusy atmosphere, you're like, what? Who's telling the Knicks to do what? And why does he matter? And it's just like this general aura is the sort of thing that sort of follows Mark Jackson around. I'll say that. So I don't think this comes from the Knicks, and I don't think you have anything to worry about in terms of Mark Jackson coaching the Knicks. The next tweet, though, that I want to talk about, let's pull it up. Shams. I'm trying to... Okay, here we go. He tweeted, David Fizdale has gained serious traction in New York Knicks search for next head coach, league sources told Yahoo. This, to me, nothing's ever a done deal until it's a done deal, right? And things fall apart at the last hour all the time. But Shams being who Shams is, and the way he phrased it, gaining serious traction, this to me has all the makings of being a completely legitimate report. And it would appear to me as if the deal is almost done to make David Fizdale the head coach. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it on this show until it's, you know, 100%, and then we'll debrief you immediately. But I will say this, David Fizdale, not my top choice. You guys know that's Budenholzer. But he's up there, clearly in the upper echelon of candidates, would clearly be a good get. And if the Knicks did sign him on as coach, I'd be cautiously, extremely optimistic. He's not my first choice. I think Budenholzer would do a better job, but I don't know he would. I don't know that. You know what I mean? I haven't been in these interviews, so I don't know what's going on there. I don't know how much power Budenholzer wants in terms of personnel decisions. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that could make this hire mean all kinds of sense. Maybe Budenholzer ultimately wants the Milwaukee Bucks job. You know what I mean? So this is definitely not like a stupid Knicks decision if this happens. And not only that, I think Fizdale has a chance to be like a fantastic coach. A great coach. You know, there are some red flags with the Gasol thing, but we went over that in detail. That doesn't really worry me. And at the end of the day, if this does wind up being the Knicks' next coach, I think it's a great decision. And I think he can do great things for the team. All right, that being said, I want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. All right, let's bring in Ashwin to give grades to Kuzminskas, Sessions, and Noah. All right, so I want this to be a thorough grading exercise, as thorough as the Knicks coaching search. So we're doing the entire roster, whether or not they finish the season with the Knicks. So today, we're grading Mindaugas Kuzminskas, Ramon Sessions, and Joakim Noah. Triple header.
Nice.
So I'm excited. Let's start with Kuz. Okay?
Yeah. Honestly, just... incredible. I thought he was huge this year.
I mean, I gave him an A plus is my final grade. I'll start
with smiles.
I mean, yeah, a nice smile was one of the positives.
Very, very beautiful wife. Very beautiful wife.
Yes. I mean, we don't really need to go there. Shame on you. You clearly hate women for bringing that up. But yes, he's part of a lovely couple.
Yeah, just seems like a genuinely nice guy. Didn't really get a chance. I don't know. I think Hornacek got sick of him real quick. I'll tell you that. I think the only reason he survived last year is because Phil like really liked him for whatever reason. Yeah. But yeah, Jeff was not in on Kuz.
No. I mean, one of his negatives was that he only played 2 minutes for the Knicks this season. So not a big impact. He was waived to make room for Joakim Noah on the roster. So that's another negative, because he paved the way for Joe. But, I mean, to, you know, round out the positives, he's got good hair. We haven't mentioned that yet.
No, I did not. You're right.
He runs the break, you know, in those 2 minutes. He was very active. And I think he really, underratedly, he inspired KP to reach new heights by just fucking yamming it on him at Eurobasket. He dunked on him so hard that KP was like, that's it. I'm strapping on this diaper 3 times a day now. I'm having my snake oil salesman rub my belly 4 times a day. And I'm going to come back better than ever.
Was that a Euro sunning?
Yes, Euro sun. I mean, Plaza del Sol, sun.
I'm a genius is what I want to say. There was a bilingual pun that I just busted out. Because Plaza del Sol is in Madrid. Sol is the sun, sun, sun. Anyway, I'll get off my Kanye shit for now.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Next season. Next season. Just for now, though. Just for like this 1 second. Next season, do we want him back?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I think he's 29 in October, so, you know.
I mean, I would love to see him, like, get another shot in the NBA, because I mean, look, there are a lot of guys that...
I don't think it's good for him. I think he needs to stay out of this country. It's not a good place to be, you know, for most
people. Yeah, you think so?
These days.
He's playing over in Europe somewhere, right? He got a contract. I mean, yeah. I knew he was going to get a contract, so he's fine. He's fine. I'm happy he got his shot in the NBA. I'm sorry that it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And that he joined such a clusterfuck of an organization at literally one of the most, probably one of the biggest clusterfuck periods of time, non Isaiah Layden era, but because yeah, I know the Phil Jackson shit was crazy, but people that really like think of how crazy everything was with Layden and Isaiah, and that was before social media.
I am amazed every time I see that. Not only is Scott Layden still alive, but is in charge of an NBA organization.
That's a joke. Like, can we just... Oh, you know, this is a really good segue, because remember yesterday I wanted to talk about how Tibbs sucks?
Yeah.
And you were like, well, you have to figure out a way to bring it up. And you just brought up a way to bring it up, because...
All right, let's do it.
He hired Scott Layden as his GM. That's what Tibbs did. Tibbs was, like, literally on the sideline. He was on the sideline watching the Knicks disintegrate, like, just turn into absolute shit. And he... basically handpicked the guy that oversaw that and was like, well, you worked for the Spurs for like 5 years or whatever the hell it was, so now you must be awesome and I want you to help me run this organization. And the first thing we're going to do, I mean, not really the first thing to do, but it's a lot funnier if you say the first thing we're going to do, is sign Derrick Rose.
Yo, it's out of control. I don't want to blow our load too soon, because sneak peek, coming sometime this offseason, Ashwin and I are going to have an episode on the Scott Layden years. We don't think that they've been adequately chronicled in a post.
No, I'm just going to put this out. This is my teaser. I think the Scott Layden years are worse than the Isaiah years.
We're going to make a compelling case.
Just from the personnel perspective, obviously, Isaiah had... God knows what else was going on with Isaiah. But.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember any sort of like sexual harassment allegations from Scott Layden's administration. But
don't you remember that other thing with Isaiah where he like he took a bunch of pills or something, and then the like an ambulance came to us? There was some weird thing that happened.
Yeah, we'll save that for the darkest day on the pod possible. I don't know what's going to have to happen for me to want to talk about that.
That seems like an August pod, where like, because everyone hates August, kind of, you know.
That's true. Just like the stinkiest, like garbage in New York days of this of the year.
Yeah, like nothing's happening in the NBA because everyone's done with their shit.
Yep. So Rabban Sessions, speaking of stinky garbage, something's happening in this offseason where I'm just becoming, I'm like revealing myself. I'm a snake shedding its skin to show you guys the Ryan inner core of my being. But Rabban Sessions, he played for the Knicks this season. He was a big part in helping us lose those first three games. So, like...
He was, you know, I'm giving him an F. I'm going to give him an F because he sucked so bad that Hornacek... And, like, this is so annoying. So, Hornacek, he sucked so bad. Hornacek,
are you reading my notes right now? Sorry, keep going. But
But he sucked so bad that he somehow forced Jeff into playing Jack... And then he fell in love with Jack to an unreasonable degree. Because, look, to Jack's credit, like, he actually was, to some degree, like, he helped, quote-unquote, save the season.
Right.
But...
Like, grading on a curve, I'll just spoiler alert the Jared Jack episode. Like, he gets, like, an A-plus for what you could expect of him. I mean,
yeah, Jack was great. I mean, no problem with Jack.
Yeah. But continue.
Yeah, so he gets an F for creating the perfect storm that enables Jeff to just fall in love.
Yes,
with Jack.
I mean, like, so okay, I gotta say, my final grade for him was F triple minus, and my biggest negative against him was, like, I'm just going to read my notes because it's ridiculous that we were, like, so identical. So here's what I wrote. So completely horrible that replacing him with all caps Jarrett Jack had people hailing Jeff Hornacek as some sort of coaching genius, setting in motion the wheels that would eventually, all caps, run over our dear, sweet, beautiful baby Frank and limit his minutes when Jeff thought it was winning time, quote unquote. So, I mean,
God, it wasn't even, the thing is, it wasn't even like a Frank thing. It was also, it was,
no, Brent. That's giving
like,
it.
Yeah. It's like it made no sense. That, I mean, it made sense while we were winning because you were like, all right, like, I understand, even if the numbers disagree, I can always understand when a coach is like, look, the numbers say one thing, but we're winning, like, guys are comfortable in their spots. Like, I'm totally fine with that. I think that that's a valid point. But it's like, man, when it started going to shit, I was like, oh, God, this sucks. And you know what? It's all Sessions' fault.
Yes, I agree. And I wonder, and I was thinking about this, I wonder in hindsight if Jeff held on to him too long, partially because he was like, everyone's hailing this as my best move. Like, you know, people were kind of like, I don't know about this guy. And then he did this and was like, well, that was a good move, that he just like clung on to that. Because he was like, see, my good move? Like, my good move? It's still my good move. But
yeah, and look, I'll be the first one to say when they announced, because I think so, we lost the first three games and then it was announced like an hour before the fourth game, which was against the Nets. And this was like, I think the Nets had beaten the Cavs or something that week. And everyone was like, I remember some idiot.
Little did we know, they scored like 140 points against the Cavs. And you're like, wow, that must mean something.
Yeah, and they, some clown put out this article about how like the Nets' future is just so much better and they play such better basketball and everything is fun.
You're not naming the clown today? Yesterday you would have.
I could do it. James Hairbear? I think it was him. Uh-oh. Pretty sure it was him. I don't know. I'll double check that and I'll let everybody know on my Twitter, which 7 people follow.
No, I just got sad because I had him on my old podcast a couple times and I really like talking to him and I think he's a sharp guy.
He's a sharp guy. He likes being a real big dick, though.
But sorry, yeah, James. James just have to stick together. That's another thing that you may not know.
So. All J's.
That's right.
So I was like, I remember when that news came out, I was actually out with a friend just grabbing a couple of drinks, and then we were going to go back and watch the game, and then we both saw that come up on our Twitter, and we're like, yeah, let's just get bombed. because this is gonna suck. But yeah, no, it worked out. So I will always give Jeff Hornacek that decision because it was a good decision, and it's one that I think almost everybody on social media was like, "This guy is an idiot."
I said it, and then I apologize the next time on the podcast. I was like, you know what? I was wrong. That was the right decision. In the sake of being thorough, just to close out my scouting report on Sessions this year, the one positive I didn't mention was, can drive a little bit? ? And my negatives were not good enough to play on a team that saw Lance Thomas get heavy minutes. 32 years old, can't play defense, can't play offense. Shot 18% on threes and 35% on twos. So, F triple minus. I want to talk about Joakim Noah, close out the pod, but first, just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, please, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Please. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So, Joakim Noah. Let's talk about Joakim Noah.
A fucking A+ for getting into a fight with Jeff Hornacek, which I honestly, look, even the people that like, that think Jeff got a, you know, like he got a rough ride in New York and whatever.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that
maniacs. The maniacs out there,
point,
you know?
Yeah, but like I think even there, everybody at one point this season wanted to go at Jeff. Anybody that's a Knicks fan at some point this season was like, dude, I'm gonna punch this guy.
Except for people who are like, I'm a free spirit. I just know how to think. I like the way you think, Jeff Hornacek.
I don't know what to grade him. I kind of felt bad for him, obviously not in the sense that he's struggling in life or anything, because he's not. Nice. But I thought that, I don't know what happened the last year he was in Chicago, I really, it was like sad watching him, because at one point he was like this, you know, super energetic, just kind of like braggadocious, crazy man. And he just played his, like, that guy, like, played his heart out every time. I remember it was so annoying watching him play because I was like, fuck you, Isaiah Thomas, every time I watched him play.
Yeah.
But
same.
Yeah, so it was like, but then, like, I don't, that last year in Chicago, he was hurt, and you could just, like, the confidence in his game, like, I thought maybe getting that, and look, I the contract Phil gave him was never a good idea.
No.
But you maybe were hoping, like, you know, you get paid like that, you would think it may give you, like, confidence again in who you are and, like, what, it's, like, validating, right, to get a big contract like that.
Sure.
To some degree. And
you're like, oh, shit, maybe I do still have it. Like, this guy believes in me.
Yeah, and but it, I don't know, even, like his first year in New York, it was, I don't know, you could tell pretty quick that he's, like, I don't know what happened. He just lost that, I don't know, he used to play the game with, like, this ferocity. It was, like, a really awesome mix of ferocity and joy.
Yes.
That's, like, the only way I could describe how he played. And since he's been in New York, and it, like, we'll get into this year, but at least in that first year, it was never, it was that mix of what made him great, because, you know, so much of what made him great goes beyond, yeah, obviously he was never a great scorer, he was a nice passer, he did, like, all these things, but, like, so much of what made him great is how he played the game, and, like, I just, that was never there in his first season, so it was, I thought it was pretty obvious. I thought that he had busted his ass coming into the season, like, because he had the suspension he was going to serve, but I thought he was, like, I think he was pretty genuine about wanting to, like, he had rededicated himself and
yeah,
all this stuff. And, like, I mean, literally everybody on the team, the coaches, the players were like, dude, this guy is in amazing shape. And it wasn't just, like, you know, lip service. Like, it was a real thing. And he just never really got a shot. And I thought it was weird that he didn't get a shot because, you know, he is a veteran. And
there's just, like, with him, like you said, like, he used to play with this joy. And I don't know, like, it's impossible, if, you know, sitting where I am to know what's going on. But he had some sort of, you know, to dip back into, like, baseball again, like Steve Sachs, Chuck Knoblockian, like,
yeah,
yip,
yeah,
thing, where, like, he shoots the ball like he's trying to light a match, right? Like, it's deranged. But he could
I've
make
actually
free
never
throws.
Thought about it. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, he's trying to, like, like, spark it. Like, a match on a match book, specifically. It's, like, a little thing, and you're kind of like, yeah. But he could hit free throws up until a couple of years ago, and then, he, you know, like, he was at, like, mid-70s or upper-70s percentage-wise,
yeah,
and then he was down in, like, the 40s or, like, 50s. And it, so, like, when that happens, that's not athleticism, you know, like, there's something going on mentally, and maybe it's because he's worried he's lost it. I don't know, like, maybe he was under some sort of, like,
I mean, he has lost it, like, let's be real. Like,
sure,
even,
right.
Even,
like,
even when he was, you know, because he got on the floor a little bit in preseason, and then he did get a few minutes here and there, barely any. I haven't even looked at his numbers, but I imagine he played. Did he even play 100 minutes this year? I would bet he didn't.
I don't think he did.
But
the thing is, like, his game was never, he wasn't, like, a high flyer. So even if he
was
washed.
But he
was
really good. But, like, his lateral agility was special for a big guy. Like, because on defense, like, I mean, I remember watching him legit switch out onto LeBron, like, peak LeBron, Miami LeBron, and lock him down for a possession.
Right.
Right? Like, that was, like, that's kind of, I feel like the memory of him is what, you know, I mean, whatever, we don't need to talk about Phil again, but, like, the memory of him is kind of what you were hoping to capture to some degree in bringing him to New York. And
but there's things that should have been able to transfer, like, because he still was really excellent in that kind of, like, you know, like, high post offense, like, Gasol role, like, you know, double pinch post, whatever, like, triangle action, whatever you want to call it, like, just sitting there at the, you know, at the elbow and, like, picking off guys offensively, like, with, like, excellent passes. And, like, he, I don't know, like, that, I don't think that relied too heavily on, like, his ability to drive past someone or can a jumper in their face. Was it just that, like, the league changed enough that kind of player was so much easier to shut down, or like it felt like as precipitously as like his athleticism may have dropped off. It never like yes, defensively, like.
By the way, he played
so much worse, but offensively, I feel like he should have been able to do more because he was never.
By the way, he played 40 minutes this season. just so we know the sample size we're grading on here.
I don't really know where I'm going with this. I guess, like, even though knowing I'm washed, it's still sort of. Even though knowing I'm washed, that's like the ultimate Freudian slip. It is so true. Knowing that he was washed, it's still sort of shocking the degree to which he was washed. Because, like, so much of what he did well wasn't super dependent on his athleticism.
Like, but, like, so what you talked about with the past, and this is why I'm not convinced. Like, I think he's washed in the sense that he's never we're never going to see that, like, defensive player of the year, all NBA, like, I think he finished fifth or something in MVP, but we're never going to see that type of player from him, like, that kind of production out of him again. But I do think that he can play, like, he had a game in New Orleans this year where we were just getting roasted by Cousins and AD. And, like, he came in that fourth quarter and legit played better defense on either of them than anybody on the team.
Well, that was what was – like, that was an underrated thing. Like, I, you know, don't see him as a big part of the future, if you can imagine that. But even given that Jeff would say, like, we want to play, you know, our best defensive players and to win. And, like, Noah was pretty clearly one of the better defensive options.
Yeah, no, and it was –
even diminished greatly.
Yeah, and like, it was, I don't know, like, he just, it's kind of, I don't know, I have a hard time grading Noah because he's a player, like I said, like, he's a player I really, like, I genuinely, I hated him because he was on the Bulls, but I loved how he played the game. And, like, to watch him now on the Knicks and play this just, like, it's not even that he's a worse player, it's that he doesn't play with that same, like, infectious energy that you were kind of hoping that you were going to get from him, if nothing else. And
maybe it's because they were loud and clear that he wasn't part of the future. And so he was just like, you know, I don't feel like wanted here. Like, only Phil wanted him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that might have been it. And then I think a couple of things you were talking about offensively, why he doesn't have the same impact. Look, we didn't exactly play the, who was a cutter on our team last? Let's talk about his first year, because that was the year where he actually played minutes, right? Like, he was in a lineup with Courtney Lee, who doesn't, like, secretly doesn't move at all, just stands on the perimeter, like, waiting for the ball to come to him. KP, who he cuts actually okay for a big guy, but, like, you know, he's a four, so how much cutting is he really going to be doing?
Yeah, Derrick Rose, not known for his off-ball movement.
And Melo, just... You know, Melo and Rose, obviously, these guys.
Just demanding a ball with, like, he's like, look, I'm off balance. Hit me now while I'm off balance. And this guy's up in my shit. And I'm, like, basically at the 3-point line, but not actually at the 3-point line. This is my sweet spot. Hit me.
Right, right.
It I'm triple teamed. So... Hit me. I'm Melo, goddammit.
Oh, man.
Don't how great I am? I'm from West Baltimore. But now I'm from New York. I'm from both. Don't worry about it.
Do you want to keep going?
It's getting dark. So let's finish the Noah segment by we talked about what we want. I'm giving him an incomplete. It was just such a weird season. Like,
yeah, like, I don't even think there's a point in grading it. What I would say is
what do you want out of him going forward on the Knicks?
That's I want 10 to 15 minutes. I want Cantor to opt out, and I want us to re-sign Kylo Quinn, and I want Cornett to re-sign, and, you know, Cornette and Noah can fight it out for, like, the scrap 5 minutes after KP and Kylo Quinn. Like, that's what I want. Because, like, we're not going to be able to trade that contract, right? There's literally no way we can trade that contract other than to, like, give up a pick, which I don't think we're going to do, and I really, really hope we don't do, because it'd be really stupid of us to do that. so I just want him to get a shot. Like, I just want him to get a chance. I would like to see him play 10 to 15 minutes. And if he sucks in that role through, like, the first 15 games or something, all right, whatever, bench him again. But, like, he needs to get a shot, because I think that, like, all the guys on the team, none of them have ever said anything bad about Noah. And, I know that it's very rare that guys come out and say anything bad about teammates, regardless of how they really feel. Like, I don't even think KP ever said anything about Derrick Rose, and we know for a fact those two didn't get along. But... it's, like, pretty obvious that like, I mean, Frank even talked about it recently in some interview that got translated from French about how Noah was like a big influence for him and helped him out a lot. And he was a great teammate and it was tough for the team. And like guys have just talked about it unprompted before. Right. So I think it's safe to say that he still retains the,
the
hearts and minds of the locker room.
I think that's absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is, it's a fiscal decision. I mean, he makes way too much money. I'm so against stretching him. Like, unless he's like, I mean, there's no way. Like, they have to be reasonable with him. Be like, look, like this is why you hire someone who's supposedly a good communicator in Perry and whoever the coach is going to be. Be like, I'm all for, like you said, like give him a chance to beat out Luke Kornet. Like we talked about yesterday, we like Kornet. There's some good things he does. He helps the Knicks kind of, you know, play like a modern style offense, but he's never going to be a great player. So if you've got this guy who's making $17 million, $18 million a year for the next 2 years, and you want to let him like beat out Kornet and he legit beats him out, let him play, let him feel good, and not have us have to pay him $6.5 million for the 3 years after next season. Like, that's going to be so stupid. People who want to see this happen, you're going to be so sick of the press talking about it every time the Knicks, like, don't have a full max in an offseason. Like, it's not worth it. They need to try to, like, be reasonable and make him happy and like, do right by him as a human being. And if they do that and, like, he either performs or doesn't, behave accordingly. And then if he wants to be a baby at that point, be like, look, like, we're being, you know, we gave you a shot. We're being fair. Luke Kornet's on-off numbers in the same amount of minutes in the same lineups are 100 times better than yours or whatever, if that happens, you know. Like, what do you want us to do about it? Like, that to me is how they need to play this.
Look, when it comes to stretching him, I'm okay with stretching him next summer if, like, Kawhi Leonard's like, yes, I desperately want to come and play for the Knicks. Okay.
Okay.
Then it's worth it, right? Like, if you get a commitment from
if you have that guy in pocket from like if you yeah. have that yeah that guy in your pocket who's like
then,
a game
okay,
changer
stretch him. Okay. But otherwise, like, I just don't see the point in us stretching him to get cap space to spend. Like, it's
a hopeful stretch is like the dumbest thing in the world. If they're like, well, like fingers like crossed we could bring someone in, like, that would be such a mistake.
So the biggest thing is you don't want to compound problems. And so, like, I know people had a lot, like, my issues with Phil really started last year, so before 16-17, I thought like what he did in his first couple of years were generally like they ranged from boringly mediocre to whatever while we were kind of like in this limbo period out picks. But then he like compounded problems. Like the Noah thing is, look, when you get cap space, right, that doesn't mean like, oh, we finally paid the price and all these contracts are coming off the books. Like, the key to that being a good thing is to not compound your problem by then spending that money stupidly, which we did. Look, and I think, oh, look, and in fairness, a lot of teams spent money stupidly that summer. So it's not just, it wasn't just a Knicks issue and it wasn't just a Phil Jackson issue, which in like he deservedly got fired for it. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that was like a fundamental issue across the league that summer. But like, let's not, because we have this problem that we just have to deal with, let's not compound it by desperately trying to erase it as fast as possible because we think we want, because then we can spend more money. Like, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense to do that.
Yeah, and their first real year of contention anyway is 2020,
right?
Possibly is 2 years from now or next season, you know, not this upcoming one, but the one after. So just like chill out. Like, there's no rush, especially this year. Like,
yeah, because there was like that whole rumor that we might just stretch him on after September 1st, because then the stretch only counts for like the final year of his contract. And I mean, I guess that's better than stretching him right now, obviously, because that would count until like
whatever, but 2023.
Yeah, right. But there's no rush, and like And one good thing, or not one, not like Perry's only done one good thing, but one of the good things Perry's done is like this center logjam that he inherited. It's if Cantor opts out, there is no logjam anymore. Like that logjam does not exist. Like that's over. Then
he's gonna do it. Cantor's so dumb. He's gonna do it.
I hope he does it. Oh my god, if he does it,
Did you see that beard?
Oh my god, dude! And if he does it, we smoked. Like, Perry just smoked Bresti in that deal.
I mean,
if Cantor opts out. Just smoked Bresti. And that makes me so happy because, like, we've lost so many trades. We've lost every trade in, like, the history of mankind. it would just be a nice, and it's not even like a big win to be honest, but it would be like a nice win to just be like, yeah, enjoy having Melo's carcass for $28 million on your roster. Well,
like, Melo, you know, I shat on him this episode. I've shat on him a bunch. Whatever. As a dude, he's fine. But like, that was one of those rare cases where even if they got hurt a little bit more than Knicks, I think it was worth it just to like end the Melo era, let KP come into his own as much as he could. Like, and it was that was like, invaluable, I think, really. Because what we saw last year at the beginning of the year, we would still be wondering what kind of player KP is, I think. Like, you know, now there's the injury concern, but if Melo was here, like, he wouldn't have had that chance to rip off those 30-game streaks. Like, look at what Melo's, like, doing right now. You know, like, would he really have been like, I'm not the first option anymore? Like, of course not.
But, like, also, even beyond the offense, like, his... So, like, we all know, obviously, that Melo's never been some... He's basically been a bad defender his entire career. But his last year in New York was truly, like he reached the level of... His defense is so bad now that even on the nights that he's giving you good offense, he's almost, like, usually a net negative. So, and now, I mean, it just exacerbated now. So it's, like, I thought he just mailed it in. And, like, people can say all this stuff about like whatever else was going on with Phil and blah blah blah. And it's like, dude, you get paid $25 million a year. You're the max player. Like, I don't want to hear shit about any of that. I really don't. Like, because and like for this city, with this fan base, this media to like basically give him that pass and just let him go through with that for the entire year is a joke. Considering like Patrick Ewing got shit on for making the playoffs too often and not winning a chip. Like, that's what Patrick Ewing got shit on for.
Right.
So what are we, like, since when did the standard become, like, well, he answers questions and he's a good professional? Like, I'm sorry, that's not the fucking standard for what, like, in my opinion, is a max player. It's just not. I'm not going to, like, I think Melo, for the most part of his time in New York, and I'm just talking about, I don't want to get into the whole, like, what we gave up to get him and all that shit. Like, I thought on the court, he delivered what I expected him to deliver for the most part, right? Like, I never expected Melo to turn into some amazing two-way player or whatever. But, like, his two best years in New York were legitimately really good.
They were great. And if you look at, like, they were also his most efficient, you know?
Right.
And he's someone who, you know, I'm sorry that I cut you off in the middle of your point, but, like, he's someone who did have all the talent in the world, and I honestly think a huge part of it was his mental approach. And a lot of, if you go back and kind of like, I'm not sure what year this happened, but I remember people talking about LeBron being like, oh, he's talking about wanting to be more efficient. And that was like a big deal because obviously now it's all we talk about, but from a player perspective especially, like, you know, Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time, but he wasn't talking about like efficiency really. You know, it wasn't like in those terms. Like, LeBron was someone who embraced these different ways of looking at, like, maximizing his talents. Like, he's very, you know, like, corporate in that way. He's like, how can I just, like, wring everything out of what I am? In a way where Melo was like, yo, like, I'm the fucking best. Like, trust me, I'm going to do Melo, you know? And, like, obviously he was supremely talented, but there was this different approach that really made him not as good as he could have been.
Yeah, Melo always... He always had the tools. Like, that the tools were always there, and that's what every coach he's ever had. Shit, even Phil Jackson basically said it, right? I mean, Phil said it. D'Antoni has I think he said it. Carl has said it multiple times. Though Carl's the biggest loser there is, but
yeah, I mean, I do want to say that. That's like George Carl, if you go back and look at like historically the kind of things he says, like, he's an idiot and he's an asshole. You know, allegedly. So I don't get sued, but he's a fucking bozo, and like he wasn't like he's one of the most overrated people of all time.
Yeah, so. I was actually like genuinely like, yeah, when he got fired after they won 57 games, I was like, good.
Like, he's a moron, for sure. So who knows what would happen?
Just to finish the point, like I thought he was really good for the most of the time he was in New York, or at least I should say that even if you disagree with that, he was the player that he always was. He was the player that the Knicks traded for, and I can't criticize him for I'm not going to criticize him for being the player that the Knicks decided that they needed to appease at every turn, but I will criticize him for his effort in that final season because I thought it was awful, and I don't care about any of the mitigating circumstances around it. Like, he was just a fucking joke that last year. And it was, I don't know, man.
It was similar to what we talked about with LeBron's exit. I think he knew. He's like, I'm done, you know. And I will say, like, to give him some, like, as a Knicks fan, you're, like, totally within your right to be angry at him, and I wasn't happy with him. As a human, I can just understand that, like, when you're done with the job, you just stop trying. You're like, I know I'm out. Like, I'm not.
Oh, I mean, I got it. I got it. It was just...
Well, I'm more talking to our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, in that sense. Yeah. I mean, unless we want to keep debating. Well, no, let's talk about this.
Oh, Mello. I mean, we're at the hour mark now, so I think it's a good place to stop. I might split this in half for the first time. I've toyed around with that idea.
Ooh.
Have it be a two-parter. Five. Yeah. But all right, where can the people find you online? Hit them with it again. They can't remember. They're, you know...
At 20 poo.
That's right. Thanks again, Ashwin.
Yep. Thanks for having me, James.
That's it for today's show. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you got a moment, do us a favor and rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. And tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!